All right, guys, welcome in. This is Locked On Eagles. Louis DiBiase here joining you, as always, on the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day, a Wednesday edition of the podcast here. Week two, during the dead zone, as I like to call it, of the NFL offseason, with the NFL draft officially over. Heading into week two, already knowing the results of the 2020 draft for the Philadelphia Eagles. However, things are going to get interesting tomorrow. There will be some activity in the NFL, which is kind of carrying the headlines right now in the sports world as the COVID-19 pandemic continues to stall the NBA season, the NHL, MLB, you name it. Tomorrow, the NFL 2020 regular season schedule. Again, assuming that it starts on time in September, at 8 o'clock, the NFL schedule will be released, and we will know, and again, there's going to be leaks before that, but tomorrow we're going to know what the Eagles' 2020 regular season schedule looks like. That's going to be a really fun podcast tomorrow night to react to what the Eagles are working with, and that was a fun show last year I liked doing with Gino, so me and Gino are going to do the same thing tomorrow. We're not going to do a pre-schedule release show. I want to react right after because I feel like a lot of the storylines are getting a lot of the same talking points. They're not going to change once we know the order of the schedule, as we already know who the Eagles are playing this year. They're playing the AFC North. They're playing the NFC West. They play the Saints and the Packers, and that's it, and you know, the NFC East. So the opponents are already known, so we could get into all that already, but I thought, let's save it for when the schedule comes out, and then we can talk about in the order with primetime games, you know, quarterback battles, if the schedule's loaded up front, because last year, right, the beginning of the season was so much tougher for the Birds than the end of the season. It's why they could win the NFC East and go on that four-game win streak despite being 5-7 and seemingly dead in the water with all the injuries they had. They still pulled off four wins in a row against weak NFC East teams. So is that going to be the same thing this year where the beginning of the season's really hard? They have to go on another three-game road trip, or is it going to be more balanced out? We're going to find out tomorrow. Again, the schedule releases at 8 p.m. Me and Gino will react right here on Locked On Eagles immediately after, so make sure you subscribe to the podcast so then when we post it, it'll go right into your phone. Or if you're more of a computer podcast listener, you can always check them out as well on LockedOnEagles.com, and it works on your phone as well on the website. Coming up today, we're going to continue our crossover series right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. I sat down with Jeff Lloyd of Locked On Browns. The Eagles have not played the Cleveland Browns since week one of 2016, which really is a special day in Eagles history because it jump-started the most successful Eagles era in franchise history under Doug Peterson, under Carson Wentz. Their first game together after the Eagles trade Sam Bradford, they played the Cleveland Browns, and the rest was history. Those two teams very different, you know, 4 years later. So I sat down with Jeff Lloyd talking about what to expect from both teams in the 2020 season. Got down to some what ifs, you know, because the Cleveland Browns could have took Carson Wentz at second overall. And also we got into a really interesting discussion about Eagles defensive end slash linebacker, really just a pass rusher is what I think he's going to be in 2020. Jannard Avery, who was with the Cleveland Browns in 2018 and for half of 2019. Jeff Lloyd's a big fan of him. The Eagles, I don't think, knew how to properly utilize him last year. How are they going to use him this year to maximize the value they gave up for him, which was a fourth-round pick? That's all coming up in today's edition of Locked On Eagles. But before we get into that, Dave Spadaro kind of got things moving again here with this Alshon Jeffrey talk. And I've hit on it a couple times on this podcast. About a month ago, I would say in the beginning or mid-March, during the week of free agency, when the Eagles were not signing wide receivers, the talk, and Howie Roseman mentioned Alshon Jeffrey multiple times in interviews, the talk was, you know, surrounding Alshon, is he going to be on this team in 2020? Because before that, I thought it was a foregone conclusion that he would not be on this roster. However, Roseman continued to mention his name when it comes to the plans at wide receiver this year. And then Dave Spadaro the other day is posting an interesting story. And again, he is the Eagles, like, he is their mouthpiece in the media. He is their insider, the official Eagles insider for PhiladelphiaEagles.com. He runs all the team's online content. So he definitely has ears inside the building. I mean, he is inside the NovaCare complex. At the same time, I feel like the organization can often use a guy like Spadaro for, you know, certain things like leverage. And that's what maybe I think was happening here. But let me just give you some context before I get into my thoughts about Alshon Jeffrey and what Spadaro said. Spuds thinks Alshon is going to be a major part of the offense, or at least that's what he said in his article. I get him, Howie Roseman, talking about here, not wanting to eat 7% of their salary cap this year by cutting Alshon Jeffrey. They have to eat 26 mil over 2 years. You can split that over 2 years, but you're still going to have to eat like 7% of your cap this year. So I get not wanting to just cut him without getting any sort of value and having to eat that much money for a guy that's not going to be on your roster. I totally understand that. And they have to say this stuff that Spadaro is saying, that Roseman is, by the way, brought up Alshon a lot this offseason. I feel like while he recovers from this Liz Frank injury, and he's going to be on the team while that happens, because you're not going to get any value for him in a trade while he has this serious injury. And in case you get stuck with him this year, because they're not going to just cut him. If they cannot get a trade done for Alshon Jeffrey, he's going to be on this team in 2020. So they have to say some of these things, and I'm sure that could be part of, you know, Dave Spadaro's article here, talking about how he was hyping up Alshon, you know, mentioning how good he was in that game against Miami last year. So that could be what this article was about, or at least this statement about Alshon Jeffrey. For me, though, it also could be about trade leverage. I mean, the Eagles right now have no leverage when it comes to Alshon, because they are like stuck with him in his contract on the books. And Alshon's coming off his worst season of his career on the field, dealing with a Liz Frank injury on top of that. The guy always has dealt with injuries. And then there's the rumors that, and to me, the belief that Alshon Jeffrey was the anonymous source that was criticizing Carson Wentz last year. So they don't have a lot of leverage. So I feel like them trying to gain a little bit is by hyping him up, trying to make it seem like, yeah, you know, I know we traded for Marquise Goodwin and we drafted Jalen Reagor in the first round and we drafted two other wide receivers, you know, later in the draft, and John Hightower and Quez Watkins. They brought in four new receivers in the midst of a couple days. And you still have a second-round pick in J.J. Arcega-Whiteside you want to see bounce back in year two, who's very similar to Alshon Jeffrey. There's just not a lot of leverage. So if they can, despite all of that, say, hey, don't forget about Alshon Jeffrey. You know, this has been a guy that's a huge part of this organization's success over the last 3 years, including a Super Bowl championship, another deep run in 2018. Maybe that, by the time Alshon gets healthy, will help them out a little bit and grab a team's interest, a winning team that could use a wide receiver, a veteran that has shown up big in games, which Alshon Jeffrey has in 2017 and in 2018. So that could also be what's happening here with Spadaro, or simply Spuds thinks he's going to be a part of the offense because he's hearing that they really are going to be stuck with Alshon. I don't think, even if he's with this team, as I've said in the show, even if he is on the team and starting in 2020, I think it more so has to do with just the contract situation and the lack of leverage they have to move him, rather than it's them being excited and wanting him to be featured on this offense. They clearly don't, based on all the moves they've made at wide receiver, based on them trying to trade him at the beginning of 2019. That's the thing. Teams, the truth comes through their actions, not through their words. So they can talk up Alshon all they want, but they tried to trade Alshon a couple weeks into the season last year. And also, with all the positives they've said, and again, I think that's damage control in case they get stuck with him this year, and of course trying to garner trade leverage, if they get stuck with him, they have to say that. However, Howie Roseman also, like, he didn't go all in on hyping up Alshon in these comments. He also went out of his way to say that Jeffrey knows how people view him right now. Doug Peterson, when he was talking about how veteran wide receivers need to step up, like he's going to have to lean on guys like DeSean Jackson, Greg Ward, Marquise Goodwin, he didn't mention Alshon Jeffrey's name. And Doug Peterson, I think he's gotten way better at talking to the media compared to when he started with the Eagles as head coach in 2016, which it was a disastrous start when he talked to the media. He still isn't nearly as calculated in the media and good at saving face like Howie Roseman is. So that's something also interesting. I don't think this team is committed at all to having Alshon Jeffrey be a part of this offense. Maybe he plays. For me, though, again, my stance stays the same. I don't want him around Carson Wentz anymore. I really do believe he was the guy that made those comments over a two-year span. And some teammates believe that as well. So, though, to me, the writing is on the wall. Even if he wasn't the source, if a player confronted him, a prominent offensive player, and there was a rift in the locker room last year, to me, I just don't want that distraction anymore for Carson Wentz, who's got to deal with enough distractions. He's got to deal now with this Jalen Hurts nonsense and the media circus that's surrounding that. There's just enough. So for me, again, yeah, I get not wanting to cut him outright, but if I can get anything for Alshon Jeffrey next year, even if it's a conditional 6 or 7 and they don't have to eat a ton of, like, if a team is willing to take on a good portion of that contract, then just take them and give me whatever I can get back. You know, I don't want to do what the Houston Texans did. I don't want to give, like, Cleveland a second-round pick like they did, Houston did. They gave the Browns a second-round pick to take on Brock Osweiler's contract. I don't want to give a high pick up to get rid of Alshon. But if a team is willing to take on that contract, or at least part of it, and you can get anything back, I'm doing it. And even if he is on the team, I wouldn't guarantee he's even a big part of the offense. I don't even know if he would start. I think that's the assumption. But to me, like, Jalen Reagor and DeSean Jackson, they are starting next year for the Eagles. And Alshon Jeffrey's going to start likely on the PUP list as he recovers from this Liz Frank injury. So hypothetically, let's just say J.J. Arcega-Whiteside comes in and he looks really good over an 8-week span, or like a 6-week, over the first month and a half of the season. J.J. looks really good. That's supposed to be your, you know, new Alshon, your Alshon prototype. He comes in, a guy that you spent a second-round pick on just a year ago, and looks good. I don't think Alshon Jeffrey's coming back to a starting spot there. And you can't just discount Marquise Goodwin and Greg Ward either. And who knows what they have in John Hightower and Quez Watkins. They have invested a lot in other players here, while, yeah, saying all the right things about Jeffrey just in case. But for me, I think it's clear in their actions over the last 2 years, and in some of the comments, again, that Roseman and Peterson have made, that they are not invested in Alshon Jeffrey. And I hope that is the case. I don't agree with Spadaro that he's going to be a major part of this offense. I do agree that he could very well be on this roster. But again, that doesn't really have to do with what the Eagles want. It's more so that they are just handcuffed now, likely to this guy in 2020. And I hate it, man. I hate talking this negative about Alshon. I want to like him. I really do. I wish someone else would be discovered as the source. Like, I wish there was suddenly a new development where Josina Anderson, I mean, she would never out her source. But if someone inside that building knew and it wasn't Alshon, that'd be awesome. Because what that guy meant to this team in 2017 and 2018, two of the best years in this franchise's history when it comes to deep playoff runs, like as close as they've got to winning championships and actually winning one in 2017, like, he means so much to this organization. But it's just so hard to like a guy if he was the person 2 years in a row bashing a quarterback that just, to me, doesn't deserve that kind of criticism, especially anonymous criticism. I don't like it, but I can't get over that fact. That really does bother me, the way he handled it. If you had a problem with Carson Wentz, you should have just been upfront with it. So, to me, I don't think he's going to be a major part of this. I think if they can get any sort of value back for him in a trade, they're going to take it. However, you got to say this kind of stuff. You got to have Dave Spadaro say this kind of stuff just in case you get stuck with him. Because then you don't want it to seem, especially with, you know, leaks of, hey, we did try to trade him last year. With all of that coming out, you don't want to keep a guy on the roster that you, like, the message is clear, we don't want you. If you're going to be stuck with him, you got to make it work. You got to try. So I think it's more so damage control than the organization actually being excited and valuing Jeffrey as a part of this plan in 2020. All right, we're going to get into our conversation with Jeff Lloyd of Locked On Browns coming up next right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We're going to get into some Jannard Avery talk, some what ifs, go down memory lane in 2016 when the Browns decided not to take Carson Wentz with the second overall pick and instead traded the Eagles that pick. And the organizations, I think their paths changed, one for the better and one not so much. After that one move, it really did change, I think, the course of the NFL, especially for the Eagles. I mean, I think Carson Wentz was the start of the team going for a championship and not settling anymore for just winning the NFC East and just getting in and, you know, having Band-Aid bridge-like seasons. They were going for it. I think Carson Wentz was the symbol for them going all in here and bringing back the NFC title eras with Donovan McNabb and Andy Reid. They were trying to recreate that, and boy, did they. And it all started with the Cleveland Browns not believing in Carson Wentz. So really excited about this conversation coming up next with Jeff Lloyd and to see where the Browns are at as an opponent for Philadelphia this year. A very talented roster, but they were kind of like the 2011 Eagles dream team last year. So much offseason hype, and they just did not come close to meeting those expectations. Louis DiBiase here joining you. We'll be right back. Guys, we'd like to thank our friends at Built Bar for sponsoring today's Locked On Eagles, the best protein bar you can find. And honestly, if you didn't know it, you wouldn't even know you're eating a protein bar. You'd think you were eating a straight chocolate bar. My favorite, I don't know if I'm weird for being this way, but I'm a big orange chocolate guy. And they have an orange chocolate-flavored Built Bar. And it's fantastic. It's so good during workout days. Love to eat it. It's just such a healthy alternative snack. My girlfriend right now is really liking the peanut butter ones. There's flavors for everyone's taste buds. They're soft, chewy, and they're coated in chocolate. That, of course, is the best part. Anyway, it's a great source of protein. 15 grams in each bar. It's such a good healthy choice, as I said, with their low-calorie, low-sugar, but high-fiber and protein ingredients. All you got to do right now, go to BuiltBar.com and use our promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. That's right, $10 off your first order at Built Bar. Use our promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Welcome back in, everybody, to another crossover edition of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am Louis DiBiase, the host of Locked On Eagles, alongside Jeff Lloyd, the host of Locked On Browns. Jeff, what's going on, man? I've talked to you all the time on Twitter and the Eagles and Browns. Like, although they're in the AFC North and NFC East, there's a lot of links and ties to this team, these two teams, over the past 4 years. And, you know, they haven't played since 2016, and we so haven't really had the opportunity to talk over the podcast, but I'm excited to do this with you.
Yeah, I think that's kind of been, like, the interesting part of this week. You know, with the NFC teams, it's obviously a lot much bigger gap from when we get to sit down and kind of break bread with each other. Conference here, you know, you get it sprinkled in a little bit. But you know, I know you're doing a fantastic job here. You know, you've had some big shoes to fill, so to speak, since you took over. But you know, for you, you know, and for me, I get a little jealous. You get to talk some January football, Lou. We haven't gotten there yet.
No, and I'm rooting for you guys. I really am. And as somebody that grew up in Buffalo, New York, and also cover the Buffalo Bills, like I really relate to the Cleveland Browns, and I like the city there. So I actually went to the championship parade for the Cavaliers, and I saw what that was like with that fan base. So you can tell the passion's there even more with the Browns, so I'm rooting for that success for you guys.
Well, it's been a blast, and as much as you know, I enjoy covering this, and you want to see success, and I think the city needs it. I mean, they love this franchise, they love this Browns team. They've seen the you know the Indians get a taste. Obviously, LeBron and the Cavaliers have brought them you know a ton of exposure over the years before essentially he ripped their heart out for a second time. This team is what the city of Cleveland wants. They want to see this team be successful. And I think they're finally, between, from top to bottom, I think they have a recipe in place. The question is going to be, are they going to burn it, overcook it, undercook it? We'll see how it plays out.
Well, and these two teams, the Eagles and Browns, are kind of linked to each other with how with the paths they've taken over the last 4 years, because obviously in 2016, the Cleveland Browns, they had the opportunity to draft Carson Wentz with that second overall draft pick. They moved down, the Philadelphia Eagles move up into that spot, and really the rest is history. Since then, the Browns took a quarterback of their own first overall just a couple years later in Baker Mayfield. So, you know, Jeff, these two teams are linked, and of course you guys have one of our former number twos in the front office, and Andrew Berry now running the front office with Andrew Berry, who was Howie Roseman's number two after Joe Douglas left for the Jets. So these two teams, like, they are linked, and it's kind of cool, too. After that trade in 2016, they play each other week one that year, Wentz's first game, and I just go back and how different the teams look now. I mean, RG3 was your guys' quarterback back then.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think about it. And there's so many fans that want to say, oh, well, you didn't take Wentz. Yeah. You didn't take Mahomes. You didn't take Deshaun Watson. Look, it doesn't matter. If it was Joe freaking Montana, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, it wasn't going to work with what they had and the way it was structured. Right. The problem is it's never been uniformed from top to bottom. And that's what we've gotten from this last 3 months. And we talk about it in... You close your eyes, and whether it's Paul DePodesta speaking, whether it's Andrew Berry speaking, whether it's Kevin Stefanski speaking, it's all the same verbiage. Everybody is on the same page. This is what we want to do. You hear things about, he was a scheme fit. This is why we really like this guy. or we need everybody to be accountable. It's about the 53. It's not about just one. We're not hearing cliche, you know, clickbait phrases like, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, if you don't wear orange and brown, it doesn't matter, or they're not real football players. None of that is the case now, you know, and obviously John Dorsey tried to run certain players out of town. Mm-hmm. Prime example, David Njoku wasn't a fan. This new regime comes in. Now, David Njoku, after a rough 2019 season where he spent most of the year injured, everybody was like, well, where's David Njoku at? Mm-hmm. What did this franchise do? They drafted a tight end in the draft. They signed one in free agency. And then 2 days later, what did they do? They picked up the fifth-year option on David Njoku. So, like, you just see that this franchise is about, look, it doesn't matter who you are, how you got here. If we think you're going to be the recipe that's going to lead this team to W's, you're in. You're a part of it. And that's been the part that I think we've all enjoyed seeing this far is they don't care about the past. It's all about the future with this team.
Yeah, that's huge, especially for an organization that's seen so much, you know, movement and instability, really just from top to bottom. I do wonder, Jeff, going back, you know, down memory lane, of course, yeah, again, the regime's very different. They did not work out. What do you think would have happened if they took Carson Wentz? I mean, obviously, he probably wouldn't have had the same success instantly that he had in Philadelphia. I mean, he would have won MVP in 2017 if he didn't get hurt. How do you think that would have shaped up in Cleveland? I think Wentz is good enough where he can elevate. I mean, we saw last year he can elevate really anything around him. But I do wonder what would have happened if they sat tight at number two and they took Carson Wentz.
For me, I don't know how it would have worked. I mean, because even still, Hugh Jackson is still playing these games.
Sure,
He spoke yesterday about Baker Mayfield. Well, some of us in the building, you know, some people in the building thought he was the third best quarterback on our team. Well, you drafted him one overall, so what are you saying? And this was the year before where they went through preseason. DeShone Kizer hit a couple of big throws in like the third quarter of a week three preseason game against the Washington Redskins. And Hugh was like, that's my guy. Meanwhile, everybody else in the building was like, Hugh, no, this kid is not ready. What are we doing? And so I don't, maybe it's because maybe it's I'm older. Maybe it's the father in me where I don't think any of it. And look, a lot of these guys were kids where Baker was more of a grown man and Baker came in and did things early. And still look what happened. They still ran Hugh out of town because what it was like, well, we just want to get him away from Hugh Jackson. And I just don't know how it would have worked. And the other thing is there were no pieces in place. Who would Carson Wentz have thrown to? Who would have Patrick Mahomes thrown to? I mean, you see the electricity, him breaking the pocket and these, you know, throws all over the field. Well, who's he throwing to? You know, Josh Gordon? No, he was never there. You know, Ricardo Lewis, who, you know, went through like everything they did, it just never turned out right. So it would have been great that Carson Wentz is the greatest quarterback ever, but the team is going to go 3-13 every year because he's got nobody to make the music with, so to speak.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, with Wentz in 2016, it started off rocky with his weapons. I mean, he had Josh Huff, Doriel Green, Beckham, a really bad second-year Nelson Aguilar. But I guess he did, you know, he see the benefit of a really well-kept organization build around him very quickly. You, real quick, before we move on from this topic, you kind of just mentioned how there was disagreements between the front office and Hugh Jackson when you talk about a guy like DeShone Kizer. I remember going back to 2016, there was that report, or maybe it was more so of a rumor, that the Browns didn't envision Carson Wentz ever becoming a top 20 quarterback. Do you think maybe that was just like, maybe it was just Hugh Jackson? And was, do you think maybe anybody in that organization believed that Wentz was the guy?
I think part of it was also where Carson Wentz was coming from. And look, it was really, really tough. And, you know, I don't think anybody truly understood, you know, the program that North Dakota State was at the time. Maybe now we're starting to establish it now with the Wentz post-career and obviously, you know, the new draft darling for 2021, another quarterback out of North
Trey
Dakota
Lance.
State.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it was you know, the kid going from this situation. And I think part of it was, is, you know, he was going from the small FCS program to now where it was going to be the savior of the Cleveland Browns. It's different to do it with other teams where there's been a recipe of success. And look, we get to January anyway. It's okay. The kid's going to work out here. What would have been put on Carson Wentz to come here and be quarterback of the Cleveland Browns? I mean, if he would have made it work, I mean, the kid would have been, it would have been great tenfold. It would have been great 100-fold because it would have just taken that much to overcome it. Not only the jump in competition, but the fact he was basically dragging a team that's been a laughingstock, a doormat, for so many years, mm-hmm. and he would have had to put it all on his back to do it. And look, no question about Carson Wentz and the guy he's become in Philadelphia,
right.
and you just love the kid. You love the personality. But if Carson Wentz, 2 years in Cleveland, and you would have seen him, I don't think we'd see the smile. I don't think we'd see the exuberance.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that he does get dinged up from time to time, heck, the kid could be a long-gone memory by this point.
It's super interesting to think about that what-ifs. Obviously, the Browns did not take that route. They traded back. The Eagles take Carson Wentz. The Browns go with their first overall pick, Baker Mayfield, a couple years later. Jeff, he had such a hot start, you know, his rookie year. And then in season two, very up and down. What happened there? I mean, you bring in Odell Beckham, Kareem Hunt, you have Nick Chubb, Jarvis Landry, David Njoku, like you talk about, a new coaching staff, well, a new head coach with Freddie Kitchens. I thought at least the Browns had a lot of 2011 Eagles in them last year when it came to offseason hype. I don't know if you remember the Dream Team Eagles
yep.
in 2011, all started by Vince Young. The Browns had a lot of that going for them. I honestly was expecting a lot, and specifically with Baker Mayfield, just from the team in general, what happened last season, and then with Mayfield more specifically.
I think the problem was, is look, the ingredients were in place, but this is kind of what we touched on a little bit earlier. It's what you do with it. I mean, it's great to have a kitchen full of dishes, a kitchen full of, right. you know, top shelf produce, food. And this is where we all, and look, me and a lot of people who covered this team, we kind of said, you know what, after 2018 and the way it worked out, let's give Freddie a shot here. And I think part of it was, is we didn't want to go name searching. You know what,
sure.
if you didn't want to be a part of the Cleveland Browns up until this point, no, you're not just going to jump in now where the picture looks kind of pretty, and all of a sudden, you know, oh, wow, they're a lot more appealing now. No, mm-hmm. screw you. You've never been a part of this. You know, you would have laughed at this job a year and a half ago. We all felt the same way. We didn't realize that, you know, Greg Williams was essentially keeping everything in line and Freddie was just doing his thing as an offensive coordinator. Once the keys were given to Freddie, and look, and part of it was a little bit of a puppet regime. John Dorsey was, you know, he loved having Freddie Kitchens as the head coach because it allowed him to do things that most general managers don't get to do. Most
right.
general managers don't tell their left tackle, oh, you're not starting this week. We're going to make a change. This is something that actually happened. It wasn't the coaching staff. Even if it came from the coaching staff, John Dorsey sat down with Greg Robinson against the New England Patriots, of all
Jeez.
Teams, and said, we're going to play Justin McCray. We want to see what he's got at left tackle. Really? Against the Patriots? This is
wow.
the week we're going to make a change at that position? And the controlling of the 53. Rashard Higgins, similar to David Njoku. David, you know, Rashard Higgins was a huge part of Baker Mayfield's success in 2018. They caught 97 passes, David Njoku and Rashard Higgins in 2018. In 2019, they combined for 9 receptions. These guys were two of Baker's go-to guys.
Mm-hmm.
Rashard Higgins kind of got banished away. David Njoku was injured for most of the time. When he came back, he had some fluke catch where he fell on the ground. A guy from the Bengals ripped the ball out of him. They called it an interception. And the next thing you know, we never saw David Njoku again. He wasn't even dressing, for God's sakes. A former first-round pick, an athletic freak of nature. Nah, they felt that they were better off with an undrafted free agent out of Princeton
mm-hmm.
and a tight end that they had found on Labor Day weekend on waiver wires. So just the way they manufactured it, the way they handled it, it was just a disgrace. Odell was injured. Jarvis was injured. Baker, and I think part of the thing was as much hype that was involved, I think once this team took a couple of punches to the mouth, they just didn't know how to come back from it. Part of it was the coaching staff, and part of it probably was on every player. You've got to stand up for yourself. This is your name. This is your legacy in the league. And I think they all kind of had a problem with it, and it certainly didn't help when they win a big Thursday night game in Week 10 against the Pittsburgh Steelers,
yeah.
kind of get the record looking a little bit better, but you lose Myles Garrett. Olivier Vernon's gone. They lost their two starting cornerbacks for a month. They had 8 safeties on this roster, and then once they got down to the last couple of weeks in the season, they were playing safety 7 and mm-hmm. safety number 8. That was it. Everybody was gone. Everybody was injured. The defense didn't have enough in them to fight anymore, and the offense didn't have enough cohesion to it to succeed.
It's super interesting to see what the Browns are going to do here in year 3 under Baker Mayfield with a new head coach. Still a ton of talent on both sides of the ball. One guy, actually, I wanted to ask you, Jeff, before we wrap this up, that the Eagles got, he was a former Cleveland Brown, and right now I feel like the fan base, the Eagles traded with Cleveland last year for Jannard Avery, defensive end, pass rusher. They gave up a 4th-round pick for him. And didn't really play a whole lot last year. Fans are kind of scratching their heads right now with where the plan is with Avery, where he fits. Jim Schwartz kind of used him more so on, you know, third and long passing situations as almost like a stand-up linebacker blitzing through the A-gap and B-gap, more so than a traditional, you know, 4-3 defensive end. He had some success with Cleveland in his first season as a rookie. How did the Browns utilize him? Where do you think the Eagles should maximize? Like, where are the strengths of Jannard Avery's game that the Eagles should maximize?
Look, he was 6 feet. He's undersized. You know, the arms are not what you're looking for from a traditional pass rusher. But Jannard Avery, obviously he was a little bit undersized, but he was strong as an ox, Jannard Avery. He moved well. He had a great, great rookie season. Here's the problem, and you go back to the coaching staff, the front office. What did they want to do? They said to Jannard Avery, who is built like literally a brick S house, mm-hmm. he is as physically tapped out muscular as you can ask a guy to be. What did they want him to do? You know what? We'd like you to put on a little more weight. We want you to play more, you know, as a traditional defensive end. He's not the best linebacker in the world. Zone coverage, he was able to handle, you know, the running, you know, side to side, chasing down running backs in the run game. Wasn't his coup de grace, so to speak. Mm-hmm. He's more of like an Elmas Dumervil. He is a undersized pass rusher. They asked him to put on more weight. He put on more weight. Guess what happened? The flexibility, the overall burst wasn't there anymore. What did they do? They held it against him. There were weeks where he barely dressed, and for his time in Cleveland in 2019, I would say if he was here for 8 games, he dressed for only 3 of them. And the funniest thing was, as long as he sat, first game he actually did play, they suited him up for the New England Patriots game. First rep he took, third and long, you know, got a pressure on Tom Brady. Tom Brady threw the ball in the dirt. They just mismanaged this young man. And the thing was, is he is such a good kid, and he's a quiet country boy. He'll do what he's asked. He'll do what he's told. Get him a little smaller, and I think he fits that kind of wide nine motif that the Eagles have always kind of liked, mm-hmm. and he's got enough bend to him. Amends, amends, I'm over it. I mean, I'll take the draft pick, but he was a really great kid. He played really hard in 2018. He really looked like he was going to be a part of what was going to be the future of this Cleveland Browns franchise. It was just something that was mismanaged by them, and there were guys that they jettisoned who didn't basically play well from when John Dorsey drafted him. But Jannard Avery, that wasn't the case. He played well as a rookie. They mismanaged the young man. And then, as opposed to admitting their faults, no, what did they do? They moved on from him. I'll tell you right now, this administration, they would love to have him. And they wouldn't care what he weighed. You know, they'd be totally fine with him because they knew what the player was. Mm-hmm. Sometimes just accept what the guy is and not try to turn him into something that he's not.
Really interesting stuff, Jeff. You've actually made me way more excited about Jannard Avery than, because again, I was excited. I actually heard a lot of good things from Browns Twitter, including you last year when this trade first went down. Because it kind of opened my eyes when they gave up a 4th-round pick for him. Like, okay, this is somebody that they clearly have high hopes for. And then they didn't really use him a lot, and they used him all around the formation. But that really does give me a lot of optimism for what he can do in 2020. Louis DiBiase here of Locked On Eagles and Jeff Lloyd of Locked On Browns, another part of the crossover series this week on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Jeff, thanks so much for talking with me today. We're going to do this again during the season when these two teams take each other on, and I think both are going to be pretty good. I do think Cleveland is going to bounce back this year. I hope for you guys again. Really root for that city and all the sports teams there, including the Browns, and it was good to finally have you on the podcast with me.
Oh, always a pleasure, and this has been the best part about this is, you know, getting to, you know, know each other a little bit outside, obviously, the social media aspect of it. Obviously, a big year, you know, coming here for the Philadelphia Eagles. The Browns are hoping, you know, maybe this year will be the year where they can start talking January again. And, you know, even with all that's going on here, it's nice to just get this break from, you know, everything that's going on here and just escape into what brings us all here. Is obviously we're diehard football fans. So.
Absolutely, Jeff. Louis DiBiase here of Locked On Eagles. Jeff Lloyd of Locked On Browns. We'll be right back. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Guys and gals, start the competition today with people important in your mom's life. Mother's Day is her Super Bowl, so celebrate this Mother's Day by scoring her favorite gift of the day. Your mom will be able to travel in her mind to exotic India, sample the food, and laugh at the perils of raising a teenager in 1950s India through a new book of fiction called The Henna Artist. By the way, it's Reese Witherspoon's book club's pick for May. Anytime in May, post a picture of your mom or you holding the ebook or book on Instagram or Facebook and tag the the author, at the Alka Joshi. That's THEALKAJOSHI. A donation of 4 meals per post, up to 10,000 meals, will go to Feeding America. So guys and gals, buy the Henna Artist today at your favorite bookseller, including Barnes & Noble's, Amazon, Walmart, Costco, and Target, and make mom the ultimate winner in your family. All right, everybody, welcome back in. So there you have it, my conversation with Jeff Lloyd from Locked On Browns. Just some awesome stuff there, you know, going back to 2016 and seeing where the Browns' head was at when they decided that Carson Wentz not only wasn't worth the second overall pick, but that they didn't think he would ever become a 20th overall quarterback in the league, like a top 20 quarterback. To me, it's just absolutely nuts. And, you know, he talked about how it maybe wouldn't have worked at the same level as it has with Philadelphia because of just how bad his support system would have been from the front office to the head coaching staff to the personnel around him. Like, I totally understand that. However, it still doesn't make the decision in a vacuum a good one. I mean, Carson Wentz still, like he said, the Browns would be 3-13. To me, no way. I mean, you saw what the Eagles did last year with Wentz in a practice squad offense. Yeah, I should say, you know, skill position players, because the offensive line is still one of the best in football. But with Deontay Burnett, Robert Davis, Greg Ward, a banged-up J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, Carson Wentz still won 4 straight games down the stretch, won the NFC East, and made the playoffs. I mean, he is consistently, in 2016, even as a rookie, Carson Wentz was elevating the likes of Doriel Green Beckham, Josh Huff. Like, he was still getting that offense by. So it was still a huge mistake by the Browns, and again, it changed the course of history for the Philadelphia Eagles. Do they win a Super Bowl in 2017 without Carson Wentz? No chance in hell. They don't get home field advantage. They don't win, what was it? I mean, they only had 2 losses after, like, week 12. I mean, they lost, what, to the Chiefs and to the Seahawks. And after that, you know, Carson Wentz didn't lose another football game before he got hurt. He had to tear his ACL before he lost another football game. So that doesn't even come close to happening. It might be the complete opposite. I don't even know if they're a winning football team, let alone a Super Bowl champion. If, let's say, hypothetically, Cleveland takes Carson Wentz second overall, do the Eagles take Paxton Lynch? Because they don't move up again from, what was it, 8th overall, when they leapfrogged up to the Miami Dolphins pick through that trade, sending Kiko Alonso and Byron Maxwell to the Dolphins. They got up to 8. They wouldn't have moved up for 1. The Rams got there for Jared Goff. I don't think they would have used all the assets LA did. So maybe you take Paxton Lynch, and that's a disaster. Or you take Ezekiel Elliott, and what, Sam Bradford's your quarterback again? You don't trade Sam Bradford after you extended him before the draft. So there's just a lot of crazy what-ifs here. If the Cleveland Browns make that selection, I mean, who knows? Philadelphia might be the team with Baker Mayfield right now. And it's an awesome, cool what-if. And thank God the Browns did not recognize what Carson Wentz was, even for a player coming out of the FCS at North Dakota State. North Dakota State, by the way, is becoming a quarterback university. QB NDSU is becoming QBU. Trey Lance, I mean, this kid has 42 passing touchdowns and no picks with the Bison. He's probably going to be, if not the first overall pick next year, if it's Trevor Lawrence still. Trey Lance next year out of North Dakota State is probably going to be a top 3 pick. So that's 2 NDSU quarterbacks taken in the top 5 over the last 4 years. And by the way, Easton Stick was a 5th-round pick last year. He also talked about Jannard Avery, and I want to get into that before we wrap up this edition of Locked On Eagles. He really got me more excited about Avery and what he could be for the Eagles in 2020. I kind of thought last year, you know, Avery only played, what, it was 33 snaps in the final 8 weeks after they traded a 4th-round pick for him. I thought that was just, they wasted another 4th-round pick here, back-to-back with Sharif Miller and Jannard Avery. And I hate to be so harsh on Sharif Miller, but I don't see anything in that development so far after a year and a half. With Jannard Avery, though, that's what I thought is, I don't think they know how to use him, and even if they did, I'm not sure his style fits into Jim Schwartz's pretty traditional, I don't know, I felt like it was a very plain 4-3 defense, but this year, with the way they're going to get creative, I'm excited for the possibilities with Avery, and I'm excited about what Jeff talked about Avery's strengths are, what he can do and what he did in 2018 as a rookie with the Browns when he had, you know, 4.5 sacks. I really do think this year, although, again, he only played 33 snaps last year with Philadelphia, I think Jannard Avery really could be a player that the Eagles rely on in this defensive end rotation. Even though they didn't last year, like, their investment in him says that, and also them not taking another defensive end this year until round 7 in Casey Tuhill, or signing one in free agency. I know they brought in Javon Hargrave, but that's another interior defensive lineman. They believe in Jannard Avery. With all of that, not going out and adding more people on the edge, spending a fourth-round pick on this kid, they're invested in him. They're invested in him, Josh Sweat, Joe Osman, I mean, Deshaun Hall, Sharif Miller. They're going to see through the development and see if they can get, you know, more out of these young players. Jannard Avery specifically, I think, has, you know, outside of Sweat, the best chance to really get in this rotation and make a difference. I mean, Jeff talked about how Cleveland last year, the reason Avery struggled compared to 2018, they wanted him to get heavier, but that really hurt his play because he is he plays with explosiveness. That's what I mean. Yeah, he's an undersized guy, so I get that logic where the Browns maybe want him to get a little bit heavier. But to me, you got to utilize that explosiveness, and him getting heavier did not help his play at all. And then Jeff talked about how the Browns used that against him, and he was in the doghouse. He did not play at all, and then they traded him off to the Eagles. So if you can get him back down to that playing weight he was at in 2018, where he had 4.5 sacks, and by the way, he destroyed Halapulivahti-Vaitai in that preseason game, if you go back, I'm cool with Avery being a main part of this edge rotation. He's so strong, too. By the way, I know he's undersized, but John Clark of NBC Philly talked to Lane Johnson yesterday. And let me just read this tweet. Lane Johnson and some of these Eagles are going to be swole beyond belief after this is over. John Clark says, I asked Lane, who will be the biggest and strongest Eagle coming out of quarantine? He said Jannard Avery. So this dude is small, but kind of like Darren Sproles on offense, like he's a tank. This dude's an absolute tank, and I think you're going to see him more on the edge in wide nine alignments compared to last year, where he was more of a blitzing linebacker through A-gaps and B-gaps, right? He was kind of that pass-rushing linebacker on third and longs. I think you'll still see him do that, and he's somebody that can actually move in space, and he can cover one-on-one. Like, he's pretty decent. He can hold his own in coverage, so you can use him still as a linebacker in those situations where you want, you know, three defensive ends out there if you want to play a guy inside or, you know, two on the edge with Jannard standing up. You're still going to do that and get creative. I think Schwartz is going to get way more creative schematically this year on defense, but I do think, looking back at his 2018 tape, he's going to be someone that plays on the edge a whole lot more this year. Just some numbers from 2018. Jannard Avery ranked second among rookies in quarterback pressures. He ranked 13th among all players in solo tackles, named to ESPN's all-rookie team. This is a player that the Eagles are, I think, expecting big things from, and they could really use it, especially if they don't bring back a guy like Vinnie Curry, and you know, Sharif Miller does not progress, and Joe Osman doesn't, and Deshaun Hall. I think Jannard Avery is the guy they're going to look to the most out of all those players I just mentioned. All right, that's going to do it for today's edition of Locked On Eagles. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at DiBiaseLOE and at Gino_LOE. And that's it. We'll be back tomorrow. Louis DiBiase here signing off. As always, thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. And let's go, Birds.